Hello, and welcome to the UX Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Worthington. The goal of UX Hustle is to help UX designers design the career they love, maximizing the benefit of this multifaceted industry and strong community. We talk about what's really going on in UX and what it's like working in it, and interview people that are actively navigating their careers and UX. We don't expect to have all the answers, but we do keep searching, keep listening, and learning. Because at the end of the day, you are the user of your career. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today on the UX Hustle podcast, Sarah Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So I just want to jump right in. Tell me, could you give some background on where you're at in your UX career right now?
Sure. So right now I'm a UX researcher with ADP, and I focus on their payroll processing. And I have been there for about like a year and 7 or 8 months. Prior to that, I was at the Home Depot, and I was a what some people call, I know there's a lot of debate out there in the UX like terminology world, but at Home Depot, I was a full stack designer. So I did research and design. And I did their apprenticeship program there, realized I like research a lot more. So when that contract ended, looked specifically for research roles and kind of heard through word of mouth about this role at ADP. So I guess, and then right before Home Depot, I did a little bit of contract work for a company called Helpfully. And then prior to that, I was just in the General Assembly boot camp. So my background's in education. But I've been in UX research or UX in general for about 2 years, a little over 2 years.
Gosh, it feels like so much longer though. And just to give some background, Sarah, Kate and I met at General Assembly. We were in the same cohort. And it's so funny, I totally forgot that you worked at Helpfully too.
Yeah, I mean, it was a brief stint. It was really nice having that right outside of finishing the boot camp and having Zach bring me on and do some stuff for about a month and a half. It was good experience.
Well, and it's interesting because I remember hearing you tell your story about when you realized you wanted to go into research and really getting that clarity after Home Depot, after the Home Depot apprenticeship. But I remember at the tail end of General Assembly, you having a little bit of that realization too. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think it probably goes back to, so I won't get too abstract, but when you go through a career change, prior to making the change, you have some level of understanding of your skills and abilities and your interests. And before a career change, you realize that the idea of what you possess is a little bit incongruent with what you're currently doing. So you seek a change. So you bring with you the knowledge of what you used to do to something, a new experience. So where I'm going with this is I knew that I was patient. I knew that I was good with people, that I had decent social skills, that people were comfortable talking with me. I knew that I had a general like understanding of like visual design and what's going to look, you know, not crappy. But I definitely realized through the General Assembly program that, okay, I'm definitely more like what I naturally have and what I think I can grow in, just easily goes in with research. And, you know, I think also like my presenting skills, like I enjoy public speaking. And so one thing I've noticed in the corporate setting is designers have to present. Designers have to, you know, be able to talk with different stakeholders, different scrum teams and whatnot. But it's not as much as research. I was like, okay, I can do that. Like, I can do that all day long, you know?
Totally.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I think I love what you said too, because I always think about, you know, how does your past and your past experiences inform your path forward? And like, how do you take the things that you know you're good at and apply them to where you want to be, and just like repackage them in a different way, kind of.
Yeah. And realize that they're malleable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when did you have that realization at General Assembly? Or did you?
Probably. So after the first project that we did, I remember feeling a little disheartened, and then I changed, but I remember feeling a little disheartened that I had maybe done the wrong thing by quitting my job that I just got a master's degree in and like doing this boot camp when talking with our instructor, and she was like, you know, being like appropriately critical or giving me feedback on my designs. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. This is like the, you know, the baby step is the intro. But then my confidence shot up after we did our presentation. And I think as someone who initially skews as a little bit more quiet and conservative at first, then I went into the presentation. I think people were like, you know, did a record scratch moment of like, wait, who just got up there and did that and, you know, did a good job. And I think at that point I was like, oh, these skills are transferable. Because all I had done in education, obviously, is, you know, stand up and talk to people, and you don't have a script and you've got to communicate effectively and be likable enough that people are going to listen to you. And also in front of a critical audience, which like I can't think of a more critical audience than parents. So, you know, just having done that, I was like, oh, okay. I think that's probably when I had the realization. And then I continued to do well with that, but definitely like 100% leaned on the more visually strong designers that I was always paired up with. Cause my design skills, I think I can look at a design and think, you know, empathetically as a user, is this going to work? And I can understand like the mental model the users have of like, for example, payroll practitioners are very anal. They're dealing with people's money. They're dealing with tax deductions, you know, all kinds of like minute details that if, you know, entered incorrectly, you know, you don't want your CEO of a company to like get paid what your hourly employees do. So like they're very anal. And just kind of understanding that, I think I could look at a design and say, okay, this doesn't look like it's as clear as they might want it to be. But in terms of solutioning, that is not my strong suit. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how has it been working with other teams in corporate, I mean, outside of General Assembly, and, you know, where people have more, hopefully more clearly defined roles that you can work with and leverage? How has that been?
Yeah. It's been, let's see, Home Depot and ADP are different experiences. Both of them have pros and cons. I would say Home Depot is more UX mature. And by that, I mean that the idea that you're going to work with product and dev and UX is pretty clearly defined. Product knows what they do. Dev knows what they do. UX knows what they do. Natural clashes of personality and motivations happen as they do everywhere. But they've got a pretty strong wheel moving. Mm-hmm. ADP is a little bit less mature in the sense that Home Depot wasn't always thought of as like a tech company. I mean, but retail is all online anyway. But ADP, because it's enterprise software, was just like, we process payroll first. Obviously, there's technology involved with that, but that's not really our focus.
Right.
Yeah. So like, I think they're catching up, and even in this past year, they've done, you know, so many digital transformation projects with regards to payroll, you know, looking at competitors, Workday is a huge one, Ceridian. And I think they're starting to recognize that actually through several town hall meetings with our CEO, like UX and UX research in particular is talked about frequently. So that change just kind of takes a little bit of time. A lot of our product owners have been with ADP and have been like living, sleeping, breathing, eating payroll for like 25 years. So they can tell you everything there's to know about payroll deductions and off-cycle pays and like the mechanics of how it works. But like ADP clients haven't necessarily been sought after for feedback on the user experience. So
right.
It's a really good place for tackling problems. And I don't even really mean that in like a euphemistic way. I mean, it really is like they're doing a lot of good things, but it's less mature than Home Depot was.
Mm-hmm. And it that makes sense to me, because I think when you do have such complex software, that there's just so much to entangle. And when the priority is, does it work? Mm-hmm. kind of becomes priority number one, and everything else, you know, takes a back burner until, you know, something happens where it can become more of a priority.
Right.
And having worked in accounting software in the past, I can totally see that. I mean, and me, when I was a consultant, that was always top of mind, was more like, does it work? Do the numbers tie out? If a client had a question where something wasn't working, it was more about the data and the numbers than it was about it being visually confusing.
Right, right. And I mean, payroll doesn't stop. Like, we have payroll practitioners processing on Christmas Eve, you know, like, they want to get to see their families and get off work, but payroll practitioners could work until 9 p.m. if there's an error with payroll, and it just keeps having to get sent back and forth. So I know this isn't about payroll, it's about UX, but that is like a huge piece of what I'm working on right now. So,
yeah. And so how was that transition of getting into this new industry that's very complex, and especially being on the research side?
So, okay, I'll say things that I liked and things that I've missed a little bit. So, well, one of the things I miss about Home Depot is, and this is all pre-COVID, like, I, you know, without sounding super dramatic, it gives me life to go to those Home Depot stores and talk with associates. It just, I can't even, like, it just reminds me a lot of working in the school. And being able to, like, you know, have a successful day be like, I went to the store, I got direct feedback, I'm reporting on this feedback. It just felt very like you got a lot done in that day outside of like emailing. So I miss that. Now, we can't necessarily visit payroll practitioners at ADP, but I do have a passion, and I think this all goes back to the school, is I have a passion for people who use enterprise software. And how I think about it in my head is I want to help the people who do the thing. I want to help. So, okay, I'm like kind of jumping around, but if you can see my brain, I'm like making a map in my brain. But like when I was a school counselor, obviously I was there for students, but I did have a passion for helping faculty and staff and parents help the students do the thing. Obviously, people get an education for students, probably number one. But there's so many other things that go on in education, and people that support students, and people who use technology that was built for students, but like you have to teach it as a teacher. So anyway, I won't go on about school, but that's kind of where that stemmed. And then Home Depot really itched that scratch by by me going to the stores and working out technology that associates were using. I didn't so much care about necessarily, you know, the .com side, like, are we generating more money for Home Depot? I was like, how can we help the people who are doing the thing that this entire company rests on? And then so finally with ADP, it's all enterprise software. It's all payroll practitioners, you know, sitting in a cubicle, feverishly trying to get payroll out to people who work hard. So it's people that do things. So I think in terms of, you know, outside of like the logistics of a job and can I do this? Do I enjoy it? That kind of stuff. I think ADP does satisfy that need to help the people behind the scenes. Yeah, so.
Because we're talking about all things career change today, I wanted to share one of my favorite resources. During my career change into UX, affirmations were my favorite way to instill confidence and keep imposter syndrome at bay. During my coursework, job search, and even once starting my first UX role, affirmations were an important part of my daily practice. And so I went through all my past notebooks and compiled the 50 must-have affirmations to help you land your first UX role and supercharge your job search. You can get them by going to uxhustle.org/affirmations. Again, that's uxhustle.org/affirmations for the 50 must-have affirmations to help you land your first UX role and supercharge your job search. Hope you enjoy the rest of this episode.
And I love that, because I think that's what's so interesting about, I think, some of the industries that are later to the UX game. That's the juicy stuff. that's the things that the software that people, it's somebody's job to run that software mm-hmm. every single day. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to improve the user experience of a product like that, you're having a direct impact on that human being.
Exactly.
Which I think is so cool.
Exactly. And it's, you know, and this goes back with my, sometimes I think I'm too touchy-feely, but this goes back with my like background of counseling is, and people, obviously like career counseling and people being satisfied in their jobs, but it's not a checkout flow. If I don't like the software that I'm using as a payroll practitioner, you know, it kind of sucks. Like this is what I have to use. So sometimes all you're measuring is how it makes them feel, how efficiently they can get something done, and not necessarily if they like enjoy the heck out of it. But is this a seamless experience? Because you got to be in it every day. But you're not necessarily like attrition for them would be a client just leaving. But if it's working overall, but a couple of people just don't like the experience, then I mean the human aspect of me is like this person's going to hate their job so much. I would hate to log into something platform that I hated, but knowing that I had to figure it out to get it done, you know. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so as you transitioned into ADP, and you said you've been there for over a year and a half.
Yeah, about a year and a half. Mm-hmm.
So how was it ramping up and getting that knowledge about payroll?
Girl, I feel like I'm still ramping up.
For sure.
Payroll is interesting. If you like complications, come and talk to me. I remember when I first started there, and one of my colleagues was like, you know, so it's going to take a couple years. And I was like, a couple years? like what? But then I honestly thought, and again, I hate to go back to school. Like when you have a hard job, like it does take a couple years, you know, you've got to see a couple seasons of the same stuff to be able to say, oh, I've been here before. Instead, every day is just a new day. But I think prior to being embedded on the payroll team, which is one of the more complicated ones, and I'll say that, you know, just I think I had done a couple of ad hoc projects for payroll. So they were like, you know some stuff about payroll, come on in. And I was like, for a minute, I was like, what's talent doing? Like, can I work on job requisitions? They're like, no, payroll's hard and you have, you know, a little bit more knowledge than someone who started today. So that's kind of how I ended up in payroll. But
what a compliment, though.
You know, thank you. We'll choose to take it like that. But each day, and it's not even just me. Sometimes me and my colleagues are just like, okay, we need to go undercover for 6 months as payroll practitioners because there's just literally like we can do journey maps until we're blue in the face. We can, around this time last year in January, I went down to Augusta where ADP has an office with a bunch of practitioners. And we went down and we sat and observed, and it moved so fast that, like, you would have to do that several times to even grasp what they're doing. And they just, this is second nature for them. And we asked them, you know, how many times does it take you to really understand this process? And, you know, they were like, well, like a couple of months. So that's a couple of months being entrenched in it. So like I feel so zoomed out. And sometimes I just have to, one of the things that I've learned from one of our, she's not with us anymore. Her contract ended, but she was like a very senior researcher and she helped me get a little bit out of the weeds. Cause I was like, I need to understand, you know, everything about payroll to fully understand this. And she was like, you know, we have a brief amount of time. If you can understand like high level what's happening, because you're right, like you're not going to be able to understand fully like why they're doing this deduction, you know, right, in New York City or whatever. And I just was getting to like, I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah,
no, it totally does. Because like I fall into that all the time, yeah, of like I need to understand every bit of this,
yeah,
because I don't know, I just feel like I need to. And I think it's because I was consulting before, and so I was implementing the software and did have to know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of important. Mm-hmm. And so, but the flip side of that is really interesting because I have seen consultants in a similar role that I had been move into product for the same company, for the same product. And it is very challenging for them to think about it differently. I think that when you're used to the way you do things and the way you do it makes enough sense that you're okay with it, it's really hard to think out of the box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm a visual person. I come up with like weird metaphors. And I think like if I'm trying to, the visual that I have in my mind is like, go with me here.
I'm with you.
You know, like I was like walking on the ground and I was like looking at the ground too much and like, you know, doing a topography, deep study of what was on the ground. Here's a pebble here, here's a pebble here. And what I really needed to do was lift my head up and be like, you're like the fog above the ground. You need to see in general what's happening and carry people from A to B to C. Like, I don't have to know why there's a pebble there. I just have to know, is that a problem for you? Why is it a problem for you? And keep it moving. Does that make any, like, I don't need to know how to
pebble. Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting because you are a researcher. And I know this about you. You ask a ton of questions.
Yes.
Because you want to understand and you want to do that. And so as you're asking questions about, well how did that pebble get there? How does that pebble make you feel?
Is this limestone? Is this a limestone pebble? Like, does that affect anything else? Just a little quick aside. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. So sometimes I've had to rein myself in a little bit and be like, you don't have to, you know when the path was created, just know there's a path and they're having a problem at this checkpoint. Here's how we report this. Because ultimately, it's another thing that I had to realize is it's not my job to solve it. It's my job to articulate for them and translate what they're saying to me to the product team. And then obviously the designer to solve that design problem within the constraints of development and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so what kind of research have you been doing?
So let's see. So usually, I guess at the start of quarantine, or about like January 2020, we got User Zoom. And so we've been using User Zoom a lot.
That's right. And you told me about that.
Yeah, I think you had asked me and we had like just gotten it. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing yet.
That's right. Because I had been doing research. The company I was with was using user testing and our contract was coming up. And so I was evaluating other options. And so I was trying to find somebody that had also used user Zoom just to get an idea. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's so interesting. So how has it been?
It's been good. It hasn't been without its challenges, obviously, but I haven't seen user testing, but User Zoom's been good. It's enabled us to, the participants that we can test with are kind of few and far between. So I'm trying to think of like User Zoom has enabled us to get more responses when we weren't getting many at all, or we were paying outside companies to do that.
Right.
So User Zoom has given us kind of a very significant tool. That being said, it's not like we have people in droves filling out our surveys or in our studies because it's all it's all protected. So like I can't put it out on LinkedIn, you know. So I think the only problem that we have is not really a User Zoom problem. It's more so just like ADP recruiting, which is something else that there's like a whole team that's working on that. But overall, it's been good. It's been interesting to see how fast I can build a study now. And, you know, how it makes digesting the findings pretty easy and quick so I can put together a readout quickly. I will say sometimes, like, you can't always rely on, like, if you put in a task and you can put, like, success or abandon or what have you, you can't always rely on the success or abandon. You have to go back and watch the videos because a person could have, when you're watching the videos, the person could have just like randomly been moving their mouse around and somehow, you know, clicked success or clicked on the right link and they didn't really understand it, or you listen to the transcript and they're like, I don't know where I'm going, and they move it around. So it's set up the process, but you do have to go back and watch the videos. I think, I don't know if this is like offensive or whatnot. That's probably like really scary for you to hear. Like, what's going to happen? But my dad will say, it kind of reminds me of this. My dad will say, like, every blind squirrel finds a nut sometimes. And, and like, sometimes that is it with user zoom. Like, I've observed users click around and they can see their mouse go from, you know, the arrow to the hand.
Yes.
So that's, I would say the only problem that I've come up with really is like analyzing the results and being like, oh, 5 out of 10 people were successful. And you go back and you're like, it was really like 3. I don't know how to solve for that, but it's just one of those things that it's a tool.
Similar.
And perfect. Yeah. So.
And so, because I found, like, do you think that the users are different? Like their user mindset when they're coming to interact with a prototype is different than like a regular user would be without that context of I'm coming in to test something.
I'm not sure. Wait, let me could you rephrase that maybe?
Because with user zoom, are you recruiting like people that are also user zoom testers?
Oh, not usually.
Oh, so you're sending it out to like your own. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
We have to, and that's, I think for talent, our talent squad, they might have used UserZoom and sent it out like via LinkedIn. But the two main problems with that are, well, payroll practitioners are like very specific, and they're not hanging out on LinkedIn. People, you know, like they're generally a little bit older. They have a LinkedIn, sure, and they're technology literate, definitely, but they're not hanging out on LinkedIn. So one, we probably wouldn't get a lot of people. Two, everything's protected and it's, you know, everything, like people get funny about putting out obviously the designs and everything. Talent could work because LinkedIn, you know, I mean, are you a recruiter? Are you a hiring manager? Are you a job seeker? And you might get a wider pool. But we have, for payroll, we have to source from our payroll practitioners. And even then it's like, who has opted into this?
Right.
And also we have a couple of different platforms. Like we have an older, you know, we have a lot of legacy systems. Mm-hmm. So if we're just testing with, say, for example, enterprise software, then we got to pull from our enterprise payroll practitioners who signed in to do research, you know, and it just kind of like drills down to a lot of different thing. So I would say recruiting is one thing that they're definitely working on. But yeah, we're for the studies that I've done, we're just pulling from internal ADP folks.
Yeah, that's awesome. To use real customers, I feel like helps so much, especially when it's such a specific product. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk to that specific user base.
Exactly. Not everybody understands that, but we're working on it. Yeah.
So when you decided to get into research specifically, how did you feel about like niching down to that specific job title at first?
Well, if I were to break it down by a percentage, I was probably like 30% like, should I do this? 70% like, I should do this. And the reason is, I think the 30% of me was like, well, you know, if you cast a wider net, things can come back. But I'm also like, well, I have a net that's for fishing for tuna. You know, if I like cast a wider net and I get salmon back, they're going to be like, okay, fillet the salmon. I'm like, I only know how to fillet his tuna. You know, like I could try to apply for design roles, but even if I made it in the door, everything would fall apart. They'd be like, let's, you know, walk us through a design challenge. And I would be like, absolutely not. I cannot do that.
I refuse.
I mean, you know, I would take a stab at it, but it's just not a strong suit. And I think at this point in my career, and not that you can't start over, certainly, but like, I mean, I'm 31 years old. So I think if I were maybe in my earlier 20s and I really wanted to be a UX designer, I could really work at it. I could really do all those things. But I mean, I already have a freaking master's degree. You know, it's essentially in like active listening. So I just was like, okay, let's just go full force with that. If it takes a little bit longer because there's fewer research roles out there, that's okay. I'd rather focus my energy on trying to get those roles.
Yeah, totally. And it's also interesting, this just came to me, of it's also trusting the decisions you made in the past too. Like trusting that decision to get that master's.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a reason that you got that. There's a reason you stayed in education for so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you've communicated so well how your past and the skills that you've gathered from your time teaching and from, you know, your master's degree and how that applies to research, mm-hmm. that it makes so much sense that it's like, you have this momentum mm-hmm. going in that direction versus, I think some people think about their past careers as kind of a waste. Mm. Or holding them back in some way, like a deviated path.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say to somebody who, you know, was feeling that way?
Well, one thing I would say is that, so in my job is to kind of zoom out and see the bigger picture, and to find connections and to find patterns. You know, patterns of behavior, or, you know, I have a zero in this class. Could it be because I'm not turning in any of my work? you know,
most likely,
most likely. it's not rocket science. So I'm trying to think of what, because how I would say how that was easy for me is I would just zoom out and look at the really big picture. I'm trying to formulate a better way to say it. I mean, without saying just a really blanket statement that I fully believe in and with full force believe in, that like everything you've done up until this point is influencing what you're doing in this minute. You know, every experience that you've ever had is influencing everything that you're doing, and it will continue to only just build. I think it would be, but I'm trying to think of a way to communicate that.
I think that's a beautiful way of communicating it though.
Okay. Well, cool. you know, but like, how do you, I'm trying to think if someone, for example, came from customer service and they're like, well, how do I get into design? I mean, you're always having to problem solve, troubleshoot, actively listen. There's no surprise that a lot of people who transition into UX came from, you know, education, where you're having to manage a lot of different objectives and stakeholders, so to speak. I don't know. I guess just kind of reflect on soft skills and what people will tell you that you're good at, and kind of list all the skills that you had to use for one job, and don't discredit any of it. Like,
right.
You know, if you were the coworker that people kept coming to solve technology issues, you know, you were like troubleshooting technology for people. They came to you because you were able to break down a complex problem into a digestible solution. And you did it so in a way that they didn't feel stupid coming to you.
Right.
You know? So you have the soft skills, any of the technical skills. But I think the how I'll kind of end this answer is I'm just naturally kind of easily able to see that because of my job and being able to see possibilities for students, and students coming to me and saying, you know, I'm in AP Chem and I've got the highest grade in there. First of all, okay, that's huge. But also, I have taken a ceramics class for 3 years, and I really like that, but I don't know what to do with that. Well, just for this little example off the top of my head, I can't believe I'm actually making this connection. So, like I said, everything up until now is influencing what you're doing. So, for example, my sister is a dentist. She did very well at AP Chem. We are opposites. And she also took ceramics classes. And when she went to when she applied to dental school, they loved that she had ceramics classes under her belt, because when you go to the dentist, you got to make molds.
Yeah.
You got to aesthetically create a good looking tooth. Obviously that might seem like random ad hoc knowledge that I have, but I think that probably speaks to the fact that like my ears are open and I'm listening to different people's experiences. And I recognize, first of all, I have the recognition that everything's connected, because I think it'd probably be hard mm-hmm. to do that if you don't already believe that. If you think everything is really disparate, it would probably take a lot more time to understand the connections. I already have the hippie vibe that everything's connected. But also, if you take some time to observe what other people are talking about, you'll realize that there's actually a lot more that you know that can be applied and can be joined. There's no longer math and science people. There's no longer, you know, people who do well in English. There's no longer people who are more liberal arts. You know, everything's blended now. And that's one thing that I really like about technology, because it's, I think this was a huge realization for me. Even doing what I did and hearing students come to me with those types of problems, I still thought like, oh, I'm not a technology person. But then once I transitioned to UX, I'm like, UX, like technology is people. You know, we're doing AI. We are doing all kinds of things that rely on the people that are making them. So I don't know. That was a really empowering, pivotal moment. I remember when I realized that like, oh, I didn't have to know how to code to be successful in the technology field. I got a little bit off track there, and that was really long-winded, but I hope that made sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And thank you for those are great examples. And I love that story of your sister.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
They were like, oh, that's fantastic. We love people who do tinkering, is I think what the dental school called it. And so her now husband, who was applying, he played like 7 instruments. And they were like, that's cool. You know how to like, you know, move your fingers in a delicate manner. You'll be a great dentist. So yeah,
that's so awesome. And I think that's something that people don't always think about or realize, that those things become your superpowers and really set you apart and make you really unique. Mm-hmm. And I had a high school economics teacher who told me about, he was like, I would be so much more interested in somebody that majored in economics and minored in like some, you know, very specific time period of Russian history. Mm-hmm. Like, what? That's so interesting. Like, yeah, you would be very interesting to work with. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know how your brain works. Yeah. Versus somebody who majored in economics and minored in math or business or something, yeah, whatever, something that's more related. Mm-hmm. So I always think about that, about how interesting that is. And I think that's what's interesting about this time in UX, is everybody's coming from, has such different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And they bring different things to the table for their teams.
Yeah, 100%.
So speaking of bringing different skills to teams.
Yeah.
Sarah Kate.
Yeah.
You and I, before quarantine.
Yeah.
Took on a very big challenge. Yeah. So Sarah Kate came up to me in 2019. And I think you just like bombarded me with links and like, do this class with me. And it was a stand-up comedy class.
Uh-huh.
With Lace Larrabee.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, we would do a 5-minute stand-up set.
Girl. It's been almost a year. Can you believe that? I've been thinking about that. Yeah. It was, you know, it was like the craziest, but one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done, for sure. And I'm like, how do I top? Like, 2020 was really, it really started off with a bang for us. And we didn't even know, you know, what the rest of the year was going to look like. And we were like, hey, let me stand on stage and tell some jokes. Oh my God, please laugh. yeah, it was very cool. I think, I mean, I would definitely do it again. I'm not sure about the level 2 right now, but yeah,
that was
pretty wild. Thank you for doing it with me.
Thank you for telling me about it.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember signing up when I was at another conference in San Diego. And I was just like, as speakers were speaking and motivating and inspiring me, I was like, shoot, I have to do this.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, like, what did you feel? Because how long was the course? I can't remember now.
I think 5 weeks.
God, it felt
5 or 6 weeks. Like 6 weeks was when we performed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd feel like forever. Because each one was like 3 hours.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Each class was really long. And I think I showed up on the first day not realizing that.
Yes.
That it was 3 hours. And I was like, oh gosh. And so every week we would stand up on stage, grab a mic,
mm-hmm.
and practice our jokes to a room full of strangers, mm-hmm. except for me and Sarah Kate.
Yeah.
and like just practice these jokes that we had never told before and just see the response.
Yeah. It was terrifying. And also, I mean, after the first week, you know, we kind of knew what we were going to have to do. But the first week when she was like, you know, everyone, like, you're going to have a couple minutes to get up, stand up on stage, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, and then, like, give us some material. And we're all just like, excuse me? I have no material. There was something funny that happened to me in, like, second grade. Does that count? Like, yeah, I mean, that was, I didn't know we were going to get up on stage on the first day. Absolutely not. But I think there was no other way to do it. Because then I think every other week I felt a little anxious. And that first week I was like, well, you know, I didn't know it was going to happen. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because, you know, one of my goals at the beginning of 2020, LOL, mm-hmm. was more public speaking. And so mm-hmm. I had gone to like a host your own event mm-hmm. conference mm-hmm. To prepare for UX Hustle. And then at the same time, I guess it was after that event that I went to the stand-up comedy class. So that was kind of the theme for the year, which mm-hmm. ended up being funny.
But your word, when we went to the Women Work and Worth, I don't remember my Y word was, but I remember yours was speak, right?
Yes. Yeah. So Sarah Kate and I went to my first ever conference. And so all the conferences I've been to, now I'm a conference junkie and it's all Sarah Kate's fault. We went to this event with Talia Delju, who spoke at UX Hustle Summit, and Kate Gremion hosted it. Mm-hmm. And they had a company before called Mavenly. There was a career coach who came and spoke, Michelle Ward. And as part of it, she had this visualization at the beginning of your perfect day and all this stuff, and then you were supposed to just like come up with a word for your like one word career, and mine was speak, and I still have it. She passed out this sticker, and I still have it on my bedroom or bathroom mirror.
Nice. Oh yeah, we have a great picture from that.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a fun conference. Mm-hmm. It really showed me how like the power that conferences can have mm-hmm. of motivating and inspiring and bringing people together mm-hmm. and the networking. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Actually, the keynote speaker for that event was Jess Ekstrom, mm-hmm. who founded Headbands for Hope, Headbands of Hope. But she came out with like a speaking course and I bought it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. I was just going over it yesterday. For like the third time, because I'm giving a talk at the end of the month, and it's so nice the way she laid it out, and she used the examples from the talk that she gave at that event. So I thought that was very funny.
Okay.
Yes, it's all female entrepreneurs. It's a whole mix of different kinds of people. The woman who's running it is my friend Jenna Corelli. She does email marketing and systems and automation, and actually she's going to be on the podcast soon.
Awesome.
And yeah, and she actually, to update her website, which is something I do, I showed her the UX Hustle website and she was like, can you basically just do this? And so I built her website in Webflow. Uh-huh. And as we were talking about the schedule, because she's using Hopin also, mm-hmm. so they decided to go virtual.
That
which
was
is
so
what,
cool.
I like oh, that. I'm so glad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad because that's what we used for UX Hustle Summit. And we were talking about the schedule and different ways to do the schedule. I was like, dude, lightning talks are the way to go. Mm-hmm. If you have a lot of speakers that you want to highlight, but you want to, you know, get them in a reasonable time. Mm-hmm. And I personally love giving lightning talks. So I'm giving a lightning talk.
Yay. Hell yeah. I mean, you've really taken that and run with it, you know, like you really, that's pretty cool. Like just from that one conference, and you've done like so many other things since then. So perfect example of how everything that you've done leads up to this moment. That's the end of my TED talk.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a good point. You've been to all of the UX hustles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I'm so curious, from your perspective, how has it evolved and changed, or how has it stayed the same throughout, you know, the last 3 years?
Well, let's see. I guess the first thing I would say is I love how UX is always doing stuff. Like, at the risk of sounding really, like, basic, it's always doing stuff. There's always something in UX to go to. And so when I think back to the first UX hustle that I went to, I think of being, like, you know, a little baby UX person and being in General Assembly and being like, I don't know what this is, but it's supposed to help me. Let me go to it. And it's just, it's grown year after year. I probably got, like, the absolute most the first year. But I've, you know, steadily enjoyed them after that. But I would say, what am I trying to say? It's just cool how there's so many different opportunities for growth in UX. And that's coming from someone who, obviously, we've already established, like, was not in UX my whole career, where, you know, there's no educator meetups. There should be, but they're all too tired.
Yes.
That is why there's no education meetups. There's no happy hours because they're all getting home to have a glass of wine with their families. But, you know, that was kind of cool that there's just so many things in technology and so many opportunities for you to network and keep learning and not just like taking an online course, but to like socialize and have fun. And that's really special. I wish that could be across all industries. But so to answer your question, UX Hustle is something that is now just like, I think of it as just part of like my annual thing that I'm going to do, you know? I mean, I would be willing to skip like a monthly meetup because they'll happen every month. But UX Hustle is like, you know, 2 day or however, you know, it evolves and changes, chance to catch up on things. And even if you've had a hectic year and you haven't done a lot of professional development, so to speak, you can check in and be like, okay, what's going on in this UX world? I've been knee deep in, you know, corporate stuff and family stuff. And, you know, I am comforted by the fact that UX Hustle will continue to keep going. I think it's a good thing to have happen.
That's awesome. That's really good to hear.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a good point of, you know, gosh, like thinking back to how both of our careers have evolved since mm-hmm. General Assembly,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the beginning, do you remember our daily standups? And everyone would talk about the meetup that they went to the day before.
Yes.
And if you didn't go to that meetup, you felt like such a schmuck.
Yes. You did. I mean, and I don't know. I'll never, that's like a whole separate thing, but I'll never regret. You can do anything for 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hell, I would argue you can do anything for a year. You know, if you're not happy where you are or with what you're doing right now, like, put a time limit on it, but you don't have to, you know, hit the eject button right away. On the other hand, it's not for the rest of your life. And so I remember being exhausted for 10 weeks straight. And, you know, I'm an extroverted introvert. Most people think I'm an extrovert, but I am an introvert. So I just like really put on my extrovert hat and was like, I can be exhausted. I don't have to say anything at this meetup necessarily, but what's visible is what's important. And I 110% think that my involvement in networking was conducive in a positive way to all my subsequent jobs and positions. And so, yeah, it's just like a quick aside. Like, if you're in one of those boot camps, you can do anything for 10 weeks.
Exactly.
Just push it, make it happen. You know, and then it's not like you get to hit the brakes after you get a job. I mean, but you do get to ease up a little bit. But the whole,
I feel like, point, you get to be a little bit more intentional.
Yes. Yeah. That's a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm.
Cause then it's like, I feel like when we were at General Assembly, it was like, we have to go to all of them.
Yeah.
And it was more, if there were a multiple on one day, then they were competing for my attention.
Mm-hmm.
because I could only be in one place at once.
Right.
But now, or like once we got jobs, it was kind of like, well, no, all of these for the week or even for the month are competing for my attention of which one do I actually want to go to or which one are people that I want to see going to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know, this is just me trying to like comfort myself, but I mean, one piece of advice that I would give like new people starting out is like, I've seen a lot of different, Udemy, LinkedIn learning courses. Those are great. And I'm actually like, I've got some goals this year to take a couple of those, but I would, in the early stages of job hunting, if you change careers, they know that you're not like a professional interaction designer. So don't, in my opinion only, don't take a ton of online courses and put them on your LinkedIn. Like, I'm certified in interaction design at the detriment of going and networking with people and listening to current professionals. Find some kind of balance. I think sometimes people who might be a little intimidated by the networking piece will maybe overcorrect and take a bunch of those courses, and you see all the certifications on LinkedIn, and that's great, but then you have to be able to socialize and talk about your profession. So it's a balance, but that's just one thing that I see. I may have done too much networking and not enough coursework, but I mean, it worked out for me, but you know, I am finding now like, okay, I'd like to know a little bit more about this so I can just be a little bit more knowledgeable and effective. But what I did was enough to get me in the door and to get my first couple of jobs.
That makes so much sense. I really hadn't thought of that because I also went really hard on the networking side.
Yep.
And that's so interesting because I do think you need a balance of being able to communicate and sell yourself a little bit, especially when you're looking for that job of, and that's why I really like, I like personal branding. I like the idea of personal branding and it being this holistic view, like not just your brand colors and your logo, but how do you show up when you go to a meetup? What can people expect and know about you when they are talking to you? Yeah. What's the energy that you bring? And I think that can be so important, and so, and networking allows you to kind of figure that out.
Yes. Yeah.
Before you get to the interview, yeah. Where it matters a lot more. But then you do have to be able to, you know, do the job when day one starts.
Yeah. Cause it's not, and this is kind of like the last thing I'll say is I know we're probably at time, but, like it's not natural to give a 5-minute elevator summary of your life. It's not natural. So if you like, even, you know, when I get asked, I mean, I feel like I'm just now getting better at being able to summarize it in a effective, clear, humorous when I can way, a brief, you know. And so the more networking and places that, you know, the more events you go to, just the more practice you get with that, because that's 100% something that people are going to ask you in an interview. So you have to be, you have to be able to communicate that effectively, you know. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm curious, what do you see for your career in this coming year, or the year we're in now, 2021, and going forward?
I would love to work, it shouldn't be a surprise, if you've been listening to this whole thing, it shouldn't be a surprise, I'd love to work in ed tech. I really enjoy ADP, and it has given me so much and so many opportunities, and I'm happy to keep working here. I am interested in an ed tech position at some point in the near-ish future, 5 years, whatever. And so because of this, when I was, after my contract with Home Depot ended, I followed a bunch of different tools that I had used when I was a high school counselor. And these are ed tech tools, Infinite Campus, Remind, PowerSchool, like all these different, It's Learning, all kinds of different stuff. And they all had, you know, a profile on LinkedIn, and I would just follow them and occasionally look at their job board. And actually, just yesterday, this is perfect timing, One of them posted that they're going to have a seminar on how to transition to the technology field if you come from education. And I, yes, I saw this on LinkedIn. I signed up for it within a heartbeat. And while I'm, you know, I'm going, and I even commented on it on LinkedIn. I said, I'm super excited for this. You know, some random person from my mind is like, we're happy to have you. So I use that story to say, like, that's still my goal. I'm making the most of everything that I can learn from ADP and my amazing team members and my amazing manager. But I do still think about education frequently, if, you know, that wasn't a surprise to anyone here. And I do want to be able to help educators, you know, the people that do the thing. You know, you have to be intentional. But I understand that not everybody's going to have, like, maybe that driven of a focus. But I did. And so I was intentional about who I followed on LinkedIn. I followed them on Instagram, too. I like everything they post, in the hopes that at some point, maybe someone will recognize my name. And, you know, or at least I could say, hey, I saw you guys did this thing. And, you know, if a position opens up, I can maybe kind of wiggle my way in there. So ultimately, what I would like to see is working in ed tech, because I'd love for my users to be educators, to be honest with you. I don't know if that's like a good way to approach it, but I would just love to be able to help, especially with like COVID and everything being virtual. And there's just so many things that have had to change on a dime that I want to be a part of that. So, you know, maybe a little bit more stand-up comedy in the future. Just with everything that's going on in the world, I'm not like rushing to get back out on stage. I'd be interested to know if you've practiced your set lately. I have not, but I watch the video every now and then and I'm like, oh man, I really did that.
Oh, just checking. Yeah, that, like, I did that for
this
real.
This was a thing. Yeah. You know, maybe a little bit more of that. And I mean, as you know, and I'm like an open book, but like during my career change, I was at a ton of personal stuff change. So I've also been trying to focus on that too. You know, my living situation changed, my relationship status changed, you know, career. All of that, all in the same, you know, I also lost a ton of weight within there, which I have since like gained some back during COVID. So there's like also a lot of personal stuff that I'm working through in addition to trying to make these like career gains, so to speak. But that's kind of what I see.
I mean, like you're 20, was it 2019?
2018 is when we started the boot camp.
Yeah, but your 2019 like a lot of change all at once in like all areas of your life.
It was.
And then 2020 was like, we're taking it back. And like Sarah Kate is coming into her own and just like blossoming on stage. And so I'm really excited, like hearing how passionate you are, of course, about education and being able to give back in that way and in such a big way. Why I got into UX was, it seems like, how to make the biggest impact on a product and then on a whole bunch of people's lives mm-hmm. that are using that product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having a fiance who's an English teacher mm-hmm. and went through COVID. Yeah. I mean, it's a very needed space of, you know, optimizing workflows and all of that while being a human.
Yeah. And I don't know if, like, I mean, the kids will be good. Like, kids are resilient. They're plastic. You know, you can mold them. Educators, like, have just been doing it, you know, their certain ways for a certain amount of time. And that's not a euphemism for, like, the old way or the bad way or the dated way. They just, you have to do classroom management stuff and teach effectively. And it's just, like, balancing both sides of your brain. So, yeah, I think that's why it's kind of silly. I used to think like it was not authentic that I didn't necessarily think of students first when I thought of education. You know, I was like, oh, obviously I love students. You know, my students love me and that was good. And if I can make a difference in a kid's life, I'm here for it. But I also just saw a lot of things that teachers and staff struggle with behind the scenes. I was like, man, these are the people, these are like the engine behind it. So I want to help that. So, but yeah, I've like already said that. Sorry. I get really jazzed about it.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I think that's something that I love about you is when you find those passions, you just like run into a wall with it. like with stand-up comedy, with UX, with changing your career, with, I mean, all the other changes you've made.
I got a divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just a lot of different things. Just a lot, but you can't, you know. I think 2019 showed me that you can take a left turn and everything's gonna, and things will work out. I mean, I'm not saying that things won't be hard or there won't be moments of self-doubt, but if this is so, I got a fortune one time in like middle school and I was like, this is the dumbest fortune ever. But I have honestly thought about it more times than I care to imagine. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten. So it sounds like a very like obvious platitude, but I think I had to rely on the fact of like, hey, I've been reasonably successful up until this point. You know, I haven't shrunk back from a challenge. You know, if I just apply that same logic to this, then there's no reason to worry or have anxiety, unhelpful anxiety, about any changes that I'm planning to make. You just keep the train moving, you know? Because, yeah, 2019, like, threw a lot of curveballs, but... Yeah, my 2019 was probably maybe a little more rough than my 2020, but
I mean, I just, there's something that you told me ages ago, that just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. Mm. And I think about that all the time too. That's my fortune cookie from you. Like, just because I can do it doesn't mean I have to keep doing it.
Yeah. You can be talented at many things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time talk with me and be on the UX Hustle podcast. How can everyone connect with you if you want them to?
Yes. First, my LinkedIn, Sarah Kate Hampton. I have an Instagram, which is ATL_Sarah Kate. But if you have like any questions relating to career or job stuff, my LinkedIn's probably the best resource. If I sound cool and you want to hang out, slide into my DMs on Instagram, I guess. But yeah, I'm always open to talking with people about anything. I can't take like the little counselor out of me as much as I try to sometimes. So I'm happy to listen.
Okay, perfect. So I'll put that in the show notes so that everybody can reach out to you.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Thank you so much. I feel so honored to be chosen. This is awesome. I hope you have a lot of success with this. I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the UX Hustle podcast. To continue these conversations, you can follow us on Instagram at the UX Hustle or join our Slack community through the link in our show notes. If you love this episode, please write a review and subscribe.